The next case for argument is 17-1082, Augusta Westland, North America v. United States. Okay, I think we're ready. Mr. Schiavetti.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The Court should reverse the trial court's preliminary injunction for three reasons. First, because the Court erred in finding that the Army's justification and approval for the purchase of 16 urgently needed Lakota helicopters was arbitrary and capricious based on its misinterpretation of terms of art and various other flawed legal conclusions. Second, because the trial court exceeded its jurisdictional authority in declaring that the Army's Aviation Restructure Initiative, or ARI, violated CICA and the FAR. And third, because the trial court improperly supplemented the administrative record with information that was neither before the Army nor necessary for effective judicial review of the allegations presented by Augusta Westland.
Could you just, before you get started, this is just to understand, what is happening now? I mean, I know there's a dispute or question raised with respect to whether or not this was a preliminary or permanent injunction. But what's happened in the interim? Anything?
Nothing.
Just a standstill, no award, nothing for, with
that's correct, Your Honor. With respect to the 16 helicopters, now, as the record shows, there was a prior contract that had options, and so the helicopters were being produced subject to the exercise of options on the previous contract. However, with regard to the 16 helicopters, which again the JNA makes clear that award was necessary by June 2016, here we are now in July 2017 and no award has been made. The JNA also makes clear that delaying award past that date risks for the Army a shutdown or a break in service on the line that produces the Lakota helicopters, and we're now in a territory where that's a real risk, as well as the fact that the Army, because of the lead time for producing such a helicopter, is going to have a gap where they're not going to have the needed helicopters on the timeline in which they were originally needed.
What about count two and what the Court of Claims judge did with respect to count two? Are there any consequences in connection with the preliminary injunction or permanent injunction with respect to the ARI or the executive order?
There are, Your Honor. Not specifically, certainly as it relates to the 16 helicopters that are the subject of the JNA, but in addition, there are other purchases that could materialize down the line that maybe aren't impacted as of this moment today. But because the scope of the trial court's injunction is fairly broad as it respects the ARI and her misreading of the ARI to suggest that that ARI set a standard that going forward only the Lakota helicopters would be purchased, that suggests there's a possibility that if another JNA, whether using the same rationale and the same justification used by this JNA or any other, that justified the sole source of helicopters to AHI for Lakota helicopters, could potentially fall under the ambit of the same injunction. And so that is hanging over the Army's head as well.
Thank you.
And that's one of the reasons that the holding with regard to the ARI is so problematic here, in addition to the fact that it potentially opens the door to a flood of protests that reach into operational policy decisions such as the ARI.
I get your point on that, but how do we limit, you know, I mean, it seems to me you have a good argument here, but it also seems to me that there's a way we write that opens up a huge gaping hole that DOD can drive holes through any time it decides it wants to work with a favored manufacturer by having somebody unconnected to procurement issue a policy decision that you then rely on to sole source a contract.
I understand, Your Honor, but in the situation that you posit, there still would ultimately be a sole source, and there would be some documentation that justified that sole source, and that would be the procurement decision that would be subject to review by the courts. So there's no need to reach back, particularly in a case such as this one.
Right, but let me just give you a hypothetical. I'm not suggesting that any of this happened here because I don't think it, I mean, it clearly didn't based on the facts. But suppose there's a general in the Air Force out there that really, really just wants to work at Boeing and somehow decides that we're going to buy a new plane, but she only wants it to buy it from Boeing. And so somehow she writes a policy statement that puts in specifications or manufacturing capabilities or whatever that she knows only Boeing can accomplish. And so when that comes out and the procurement people that get it, they say, oh, we can't do anything except sole source this to Boeing. How do we get around that? Because the sole source award, if we can't review the policy statement, seems right. If the policy statement is not reviewable, that we have to have this specification, these kind of manufacturing capabilities, blah, 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 then the sole source justification is upheld, even if the Air Force has somehow inappropriately directed the contract to Boeing.
The law already has tools to address exactly that situation. The law provides for review of a solicitation or a sole source that's unduly restrictive of competition. The sole source would have to rely on one of the exceptions to seek it for full and open competition, both in the statute and as implemented by the FAR. And so that decision would rise or fall on its own merits based on whether I'd posit to answer your question more directly. If the justification said, we have to buy Boeing because General so-and-so said we have to buy Boeing, I'm not aware of an exception to CICA that would allow such a JNA to pass scrutiny.
That's nobody would be that unsubtle under any circumstance. Certainly. So if you say in the ARI or whatever, you create the requirements and the contingencies so that as a practical matter, it's all can only be Boeing, but it doesn't use the name. So it's not apparent on its face that this is necessarily the intent of this was necessarily to get Boeing to get the contract, but the requirements are there. Can you second guess those when you're then challenging the sole source contract?
Certainly to an extent, Your Honor. So for example, it sounds like what you're describing would likely be justified under a brand name or equal specification or a similar type of situation. So in a brand name or equal type of solicitation, what you do is you say, either we want Boeing or we want an equal product that has all of these characteristics, which are the salient characteristics of Boeing. Protesters can and have challenged such solicitations, saying you've basically restricted it to Boeing or nobody else, and you have to properly justify such a brand name justification. There are provisions for a brand name justification, but they're much more stringent. And so in this case, the Army relied instead on a FAR justification for use of other than full and open competition that allows a product to be deemed available only from one source if there's going to be substantial duplication of costs that result as well as or in addition to unacceptable delays. Because both were present here, the Army's justification was reasonable. And the
so your view is, I suppose, particularly because you already had a fleet of these helicopters, you were entitled to buy another couple hundred or slightly less than that, I don't remember the numbers, under the other already awarded contract, you were only buying 16 more here, which, you know, if you'd gone out and sold an open competition and got an entirely new one, had all these kind of detrimental effects.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But what if it were flipped, and we still had this kind of policy statement that, well, we only have 16 of these helicopters in our fleet, but we love them, so we're going to only use them for training helicopters. And then the procurement office goes out and say, well, we need 1,000 new helicopters, but we're going to sole source them because they said we're only going to use this one. How do we get to review that?
Well, then you would review the sole source that says we have to buy 1,000 of these because they said they love the 16. And that would be a procurement decision subject to review. And it doesn't sound like it would survive scrutiny such as that. But that's, of course, not the situation we have here. Instead, we have a competitive.
Just to clarify, would we then be reviewing the content and quality of analysis in the ARI in that example?
No, not necessarily, Your Honor. You'd be reviewing the procurement decision, and I think it would be appropriate for the court, of course, to review that decision and look at how it impacts upon the actual procurement decision. The court needn't blind itself. We didn't argue here that the court shouldn't even look at the ARI. We only argued that the court had no jurisdiction to declare that the ARI violated CICA and the FAR, and that it standardized solely on this particular brand of helicopter for all future purchases, which, of course, it does not, just on the face of the document. It only regards the use and deployment of existing Army helicopters that it already had, subject to the 2006, and again, I note, competitively awarded contract. And so the addition of 16 helicopters to those that were already subject to competition is what the court should have restricted its review to.
This is related, and I don't want to belabor it too much, but just reading your brief, it seems to me that you're fighting distributed solution really hard. And your answer to distributed solution is not to deal with what that opinion said, but to deal with, well, this is what the various courts of claims and subsequent cases have interpreted. So why don't you tell us about distributed solution? And I know you call a potential Pandora's box if we construe it too widely, but we're bound by distributed solutions. So tell us why that case doesn't dictate the result, a different result here than you're advocating.
Certainly, Your Honor. In distributed solutions, this court relied on the statutory language in 41 U.S.C. section 111, which defines the term procurement, which is, of course, the jurisdictional touchstone, to include, quote, all stages of the process of acquiring property or services, beginning with the process for determining the need for property or services and ending with contract completion and closeout. So here, Your Honor, there's no determination of need in the ARI. All that the ARI does is say we're going to use these helicopters that we're using over here for medevac and a variety of different purposes. We're going to move those down to Fort Rucker and instead use them to train new pilots on this dual-engine helicopter. There's no determination that we're going to need more helicopters going forward. There's no determination that if and when we buy helicopters going forward, that those will have to be Lakota helicopters. Now, certainly, it's beyond dispute, as we acknowledge in our brief, that the presence of a large fleet of those type of helicopters for training at Fort Rucker will have some practical impact. But the court shouldn't allow that practical impact to allow jurisdiction to go back, flow backwards to a decision that only had to do with the distribution of existing assets that were already within the Army's inventory. The court should instead have confined its analysis to the JNA itself, which is the procurement decision. And so that doesn't run contrary to distributed solutions. It just suggests that to read distributed solutions in a way that would allow any policy decision that has any conceivable impact on a future procurements down the line to fall within the ambit of the court's
approach. So going back to Judge Hughes's hypothetical, if, in fact, there were only 16 helicopters in your possession and there was a decision in the ARI to go get an additional 1,000 more, just like these 16, then you would agree that that would be an example that fits within the distributed solutions rule, that would be something within the Court of Federal Claims jurisdiction.
If the ARI, to make sure I understand your question, declared that they would want to purchase 1,000 additional helicopters, then yes, I would agree that would be a procurement decision because then it's defining a need and setting a procurement
up right there. If it said, we need 1,000 more of these.
Again, that would arguably be defining a need, whereas here, there's no discussion at all of future procurement. I see them in my rebuttal time. May I answer your question?
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Awesome.
May it please the court. I'd like to begin with distributed solutions. In this case, conspicuously absent from appellant's presentation is any mention of the sources sought notice. That sources sought notice was issued in September 2014 for 155 Airbus UH-72s. So to go to Chief Judge Prost's question, this is an unsubtle procurement. This is essentially a brand name procurement because the UH-72 is just the Army's moniker or designation.
But weren't those the 100, however, that you're talking about, weren't those under the 2006 contract that was initially awarded?
It's impossible to say, Your Honor. That source has sought notice in announcing the 155 That is the identical type of document, even more clearly a procurement document, a beginning of the procurement process, than the RFI in distributed solution. The sources sought notice said that it is a...
But I don't understand. That's not what the... You're here presumably defending and arguing for what the Court of Claims found. Now, was her analysis, did it on the ARI bring in what you're talking about here?
Yes, it did, Your Honor.
Okay.
So the sources sought notice said it was an acquisition to procure 155, it says, Eurocopter 145s, which is the Airbus designation of these same helicopters. Just like in distributed solution, once the court has that jurisdictional hook, no question that that sources sought notice began the process for identifying the need for goods and services. Once it has that jurisdictional hook, it can look at what, you know, the whole context of this procurement. It came out in, you know, after our supplemental complaint that there was an execute order from April 2014 that designated the Army's training helicopter to be the UH-72. That necessarily meant, because the previous fleet, the TH-67 training helicopters, first purchased in 1993, the existing fleet of training helicopters at Fort Rucker were 200 units. So those 200 training helicopters, that fleet was going to have to come from somewhere. And to go to Judge Hughes's hypothetical earlier, this case is not about a mere 16 aircraft of a value of $150 million. Really, the Army, its latest estimate is that it's going to buy 113 new UH-72s under a new contract, sole source to Airbus. That procurement approaches a $1 billion.
Wait, but that's not before us. We have 16 before us, right? That's the ones that Judge Braden enjoined.
If you read in her opinion, in the first paragraph, she mentions a status report filed by the Army a few weeks before the hearing on the cross motions below, notifying the court that the Army intended to buy 97 additional UH-72s, sole source from Airbus. And so she mentions it there. She mentions it later in the recitation of facts. And that's why the ARI, the EXORD, is so important here, because that essentially dictates that there's going to be 200 new UH-72s somewhere in the Army fleet. And
but you can challenge that decision when it's made, right? I mean, I don't understand.
Well, we didn't have the EXORD until after we received the administrative record 16 months after.
But nothing's been done yet. Those helicopters haven't been purchased. There hasn't been anything issued with regard to those helicopters, right? So you're asking us to decide a question which you will have the ability to challenge if and when it's ever made, right?
But, you know,
with specific justifications for why 97 more as opposed to just 16 more is still necessary to do under a sole source competition. We don't have any of that record before us.
I believe you do, Your Honor. When you look at, there was a declaration.
How did we do it? They haven't issued any kind of procurement yet. I mean, if you're saying that all they're going to do is point back to the ARI, then they get in a little trouble if they keep doing that over and over without even more significant justifications. But we don't know what their additional justifications are going to be until we have that. It seems like you should address the 16 helicopters that are at issue in Judge Braden's opinion.
I'll be happy to do that, Your Honor. The justification and approval for the 16 aircraft on its face, we believe is insufficient. For an initial matter, I can point to evidence in the record that in late 2005, the Army knew that it had a requirement for 17 additional aircraft in addition to the 16, and then in early 2016, knew that it had a requirement for another 18, and then additional 60. It's unspecified in the declaration when those were going to come online. as an initial matter, the...
Why does that make the JNA for these extra 16 irrational?
Well, it just starts from the wrong starting point. The Swiss Assault Notice said that the Army was going to purchase 155 UH-72 sole source from Airbus. Then you fast forward to before the...
But you're talking about the 2006 contract?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Sure. Yep.
And the Source and Sought Notice, just so I understand, you're using that to claim that the Court of Federal Claims had jurisdiction over the ARI?
No, Your Honor. I'm saying that the Source and Sought Notice is the beginning of a procurement process. It says that it's an acquisition to procure 155 UH-72 sole source from Airbus. Once that, that's the equivalent of the RFI in the request for information in distributed solutions. Once the court had jurisdiction, they can look and see where does this requirement for 155 come from. And then, as it came out, that requirement was driven by this execute order that would redesignated the training helicopter for Fort Rucker to be the UH-72. And so there you have a requirement for 200. Well, where are they going to come from? Well, at the end of the day, the Army ended up exercising the last 100 options under the 2006 contract. And now, lo and behold, before the hearing below, they announced they need to buy another 100. Those are additional trainers and backfills for the ones that they redeployed to Fort Rucker.
But just to make sure I'm clear, the 100 additional that they purchased under a pre-existing contract, you're not challenging that today?
No, Your Honor.
I think you may have tried to challenge it below. You lost, and you're not arguing against that today.
That's correct. We argued that the...
And the only other additional ones, even though you keep talking about all the other ones that were actually purchased, or at least a procurement was issued, a sole source procurement was issued, was 16.
There was a justification. The Army, issued their justification, a final JNA. There were interim JNAs. There was a JNA, a draft JNA from June 2014 for that 155 aircraft.
But the one that we're looking at is the one they issued, which is for 16, right?
That is the subject of count 3 in our complaint, yes. So as to that...
So why is looking solely at the 16 sought to be procured under that, is it arbitrary and capricious?
I believe it is, Your Honor. First, that JNA starts from the starting proposition for that is that the requirement is for UH-72s. These are commercial helicopters that Augusta makes, our client makes, Bell Helicopter, Sikorsky. A lot of people make commercial helicopters. They had an opportunity, they had a 10-year, up to 500-unit contract from 2006 with Airbus for these helicopters. There's a FAR preference and a statutory preference for using commercial items whenever possible. Well, here, the Army, they're not even taking advantage of any improvements in the marketplace and developments in commercial helicopters over the last 10 years.
It doesn't seem like you're addressing the reasons the Army put forth for why it was using a sole source award for those 16 and explaining why those reasons are arbitrary and capricious. You're telling me why they should have gone a different way.
Yeah. Well, I'll start with a lot of the JNA, the actual for 16, was driven by Airbus's ownership of the TDP, the technical data package. So the unique qualifications of Airbus was that it owns the technical data, the tooling, that kind of thing for the UH-72 without considering other manufacturers. So Airbus was considered the only interested source. To get to the two criteria for FAR 63021 has an ability for the government to buy more of the same thing if it's indeed a follow-on contract. There's no FAR definition for follow-on contract. The district or the trial court believed that it wasn't a follow-on contract. But even under the government's definition, it says it's a procurement that's necessitated by a prior procurement action. That can't be the exord in the government's view because that's not a procurement decision. So it has to be this 2006 UH-70 or the procurement that ended with the government buying UH-72s. And so the other, we don't believe it's a follow-on procurement, but if you conclude that it is a follow-on procurement, then the Army has to show either that there will be a substantial delay in fielding a replacement aircraft or additional costs that will not be recovered by the benefits of competition. As to delay, and this also goes to the risk that the government was talking about a minute ago, as to delay, this is entirely self-inflicted. If you look at the JNA, the Army first started considering a replacement or a replacement of buying new UH-72s in October 2012. It took them a full year until October 2013 until Airbus said, well, we're not going to sell you our tooling, we're not going to sell you our data package. And so we had the proceedings below. Instead of saying, okay, we'll go back and we'll fix the JNA that the trial court found inadequate, we're going to appeal this thing. So now we're almost a year away from the trial court's conclusion, and yet, the government is here saying that there's this inordinate risk if the injunction is upheld. Also, the district or the trial court was absolutely correct that the JNA overstated the amount of time it would take to run a commercial procurement. The government already has UH-72s. They essentially deemed those, whatever the requirements the UH-72 has, to be adequate for both general missions and training missions. And so there's no reason it should take the government's estimate of 36 months and all that cost to run a new procurement for commercial helicopters. As to costs, when you look at the JNA and the independent government estimate that's attached to the JNA and supports the cost analysis, it only looks at additional costs and additional sustainment costs. It doesn't take an objective, dispassionate view of that. When you look at the purchase costs of a competing aircraft versus the UH-72, it looks at the purchase price that the government's been paying on a 10-year, 500-unit contract and compares that to the list price of an Augusta Westland aircraft, as if there were a new procurement with Augusta, Bell, Sikorsky, all these other manufacturers of commercial aircraft, that the government would only get the list price or a price, or would only get from Augusta the price that we have listed on aircompare.com, where the IGE received that price. Also, if you look at the difference between the two costs of buying more Airbuses versus buying a different type of helicopter, almost all of that difference is in sustainment costs going out to 2014, 25 years. And one of the assumptions there is that the Army will have to maintain an entirely duplicative program office, the same costs associated with 400 aircraft of the UH-72s as it will for a mere 16 aircraft.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Two brief points, Your Honors. My friend mentions the JNA and states that it starts from the proposition or from the requirement that it would only purchase UH-72 helicopters, but of course that's not correct. The JNA includes an extensive and thorough analysis as to whether another commercial helicopter would meet its needs. In fact,
the comparison helicopter from the IGE was an Augusta Westland helicopter, a dual-engine helicopter that's similar to the Lakota helicopter. So the Army looked at whether an alternate helicopter would meet its needs and concluded, based on the IGE's thorough analysis, that the substantial duplication of cost that would result both from procurement as well as from sustainment, and my friend acknowledges that most of that cost is in sustaining, and that the large reason for that, as is documented by the JNA, is the fact that you have a fleet of helicopters, part of which is one type, part of which is another type, requiring different service, different personnel to service them, different training packages that have to be set up, different cockpit trainers, which are stationary flight simulators, essentially. And so the Army rationally concluded that those additional sustainment costs would outweigh.
I mean, I get it for these 16, but this is what really kind of troubles me about the government's argument, is that this kind of rationale could be used to lock in place a certain manufacturer of a certain type of helicopter or any other kind of really large dollar item for a decade or two, because you can always make that justification. We don't want to train people on new equipment, blah, blah, blah. But that can't, it doesn't seem to me that that's consistent with open procurement policies. And so I'm just a little worried, particularly if I'm hearing that you're also considering buying another 90 helicopters on a sole source, that if we issue a decision upholding your right to do 16 here, how do we contain it so that we're not giving you a loophole to get around open procurement policies?
I understand, Your Honor. First, as you noted in colloquy with my friend, there is no purchase being made about 97 or any other number of helicopters at this point. There are very early stages of examining whether that's something that the Army wants to do. There's been no decision made. And if and when a decision is made to sole source those helicopters, that decision should be examined on its own merits. And certainly in examining such a justification, the court could look back at the whole procedure of the purchase and the program over time and find, for example, there's case law on splitting requirements. So if the court found that that the Army was splitting its requirements improperly, then that's a factor that it could consider. So there are tools in the court's arsenal to examine whether these abuses that you suggest are taking place and to rein those in, Your Honor. See that my time's expired unless there are any further questions.
Thank you. We thank both sides. The case is submitted, and that concludes our proceedings for this morning.
All right. The Honorable Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.